Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Newsmakers from America and around the world speak with journalists in an unscripted and unrehearsed discussion about the critical issues facing the United States and the world. Here is your host on this edition of Press Conference USA, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Joining me on the program is Doug Bernard, producer and reporter in VOA's English division. Our topic on this edition of the program, demystifying digital currency. Our guest, Ronald Marks. He's a senior fellow at George Washington University for the Homeland Security Policy Institute and an executive advisor for Zeta Associates. That's a consulting firm based in the state of Virginia. Previously, Ron Marks spent 16 years with the CIA. During that time, he served in a number of increasingly senior positions, including as intelligence counsel to former U.S. Senator Bob Dole. We'll get Ron's perspective about the phenomenon of digital currency, especially what it means for the future of national security and finance. Of all the examples of digital currency, Bitcoin is perhaps the most well-known. Bitcoin is an experimental, decentralized digital currency that enables instant payments to anyone, anywhere in the world. Created in 2009, Bitcoin is a so-called cryptocurrency since it employs cryptography or secure techniques that render it difficult, if not impossible, to counterfeit. Cryptocurrency is not tied to any country or central authority like conventional currencies, so its value cannot be affected by a central bank. Managing transactions and issuing money are carried out collectively by a network. Bitcoin is one of the most prominent functioning examples of cryptocurrency, although others do exist. Bitcoin's value is determined by supply and demand in the market, and as such, it behaves much like gold and other precious metals. We'll talk with Ron Marks about why Bitcoin was created, its advantages and disadvantages in relation to conventional currency, the controversy surrounding its use, such as cases of digital theft and abuse, as well as the future of Bitcoin and other digital currencies. And Ron Marks, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
And delighted to welcome my colleague, Doug Bernard.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to be here. And Carol, I like the way you set this up by saying that we were going to try to demystify digital currency. So my first question, Ron Marks, is how much mystery do you see around these digital currencies like Bitcoin?
I have loved the mysterious part of all of this that's been set up. Only people who are deeply involved in the technical world could possibly find this much mystery in what's actually a pretty straightforward item. I mean, what you're creating here is a medium of exchange. What they've done is, quote unquote, mined algorithms. I promised I was going to use that word. They mined algorithms essentially to come up with a system that you supposedly can't break. So each one of these coins is a set of algorithms that represents a value based on a marketplace. So if it sounds like they've sort of pulled it out of the hat, the answer is yes. But I will say to you that with all currencies, they are a bit like Tinkerbell and Peter Pan. For those of us old enough to remember, if you believed in Tinkerbell, she existed. If you believe that something holds a value, whether it's a bottle of water or whether or not it's a piece of wood or a stone or any number of things, species we've called them over time, simply printed paper, then it holds value. This is simply a digital version of that.
Part of that value, I have to think, especially when you're thinking about currency, is elemental to the idea of trust. Where is the trust, or how do you build trust with something like Bitcoin that doesn't even tangibly exist? It's just all digital.
This is where the internet comes into play, and those people who live in the cyber world that the internet connects. People are willing to believe that that currency, that that Bitcoin, has some value. Now, we've had this over time. The United States has been very fortunate in terms of its currency and its value. Really, since 1945, we've held sway in terms of the world. The British did beforehand, about 100 years beforehand. So we have been the value. Our currency has gone up and down in value versus other currencies. Mm-hmm. Other currencies go up and down in value around the world. We've been very fortunate in terms of having a fairly stable version of that. For those of us who lived and covered some of the issues in Latin America over the years in terms of currencies there.
Argentina, for example.
I was just thinking of the newest new peso. When you start getting into countries where there is trouble, whether, say, for instance, Zimbabwe, Cambodia, or some of these other countries, The currency, again, fluctuates in value, and it's a function of the trust of the people. One of the reasons that the dollar has maintained its value over the years is people trust a $17 trillion economy, $320, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, we too in our time have gone through a series of crises and crashes, certainly back in the 1800s and really up until the creation of the Federal Reserve, and then even after that in the 1920s, early 1930s. So we're not without having some problems. We've had actually some problems in the 60s and 70s, oil price rises. The French, in fact, at one point were taking gold out. We removed our currency from the value of gold. It used to be valued at $35 an ounce. And we simply declared it was our good faith that was going to now back these dollars. And that's about 40-some-odd years ago now.
Well, Ron Marks, notwithstanding problems with conventional currency like the dollar or the euro, what is the purpose of digital currency? What does it say about conventional currency that someone had to come up with this virtual currency?
It really does go back to psychology, and I hate to make it in such an ambiguous fashion, but you do have a generation of people now who live on the internet, who believe in the freedom of that internet, and they think of themselves as people who go beyond national borders. These are people who don't accept the Treaty of Westphalia anymore. The idea of a nation state is something they look at and they go, well, I don't believe in that. They are sort of crypto anarchists to some extent. They don't like large organizations. They're not comfortable with this. And they're comfortable with the idea that they have a currency that is of cyberspace.
I have to think that's a fairly small number of people, though.
Well, I think you're dealing with a very thin market here. And I think one of the challenges of that marketplace, and again, you know, Bitcoin could be replaced by something else tomorrow if everybody decides that they don't like this thing.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, one of the interesting parts about this thing is this is a currency that exists without a government. It is a currency that exists based on people's faith in this. And I think you pointed out about commodities before as well. I mean, you see the commodities markets going up and down all the time based on people's think, well, we're going to use this for X, Y, and Z. I think if you begin to develop, and it is beginning to develop, a market that goes beyond simply speculation to one of exchange, where you can buy these things now. You can buy them at Bank of America. You can buy them through, you know, J.P. Morgan or whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
And you, in turn, can actually exchange them for goods, which is happening. You know, you might begin to develop more of a market for this thing. People might be a little less afraid of using it. I'm not convinced that this thing is going to last as long as people seem to think it's going to last, but it is an interesting step in the world of cyberspace. And I still think that we're sort of in the baby stages here right now. This is obviously cumbersome, but there's some potentials here for people actually thinking about something beyond the dollar, beyond nation-state currencies.
I'd like to, if we can, Carol, get into a little bit of the specifics, try to make what is essentially not real as real as we can. But first, I'm curious, do you have any Bitcoins yourself?
I have, believe it or not, placed an order this morning so I could look at you straight in the eye and tell you that I did it. Yeah, absolutely. It was, you know, a few hundred, I can't remember what it was, $600-$800 or something like that. So something my wife and I may not talk about immediately, but it's very straightforward. You are bidding on a marketplace. It's a little bit like for those of us who travel on occasion, we go into exchange currency and you will see that there's a buy and a sell. And you buy it for a certain amount, and they sell it for a certain amount. There's margin in between, and somebody's going to make a little bit of profit on it. And congratulations, you now have a Bitcoin. It is online. You can use that Bitcoin to buy things in certain places. I was on the net this morning trying to see what places beside
who
would accept them.
Mm-hmm.
And who does, for example, other than the drug dealers?
Well, you know,
we'll
it's
talk
interesting.
About that later.
It is interesting. You know, I think originally when I first saw it too, you know, my first thought was, boy, this is a drug dealer's dream, or every other guy who's involved with organized crime. But you would be surprised. You know, I saw a couple of sporting goods companies. I saw a couple of, you know, like Starbucks. Mm-hmm. I saw Fidelity Investments had thought about allowing people to include them in their portfolio. I think they may have switched their opinion in the last couple of weeks. Bank of America just did a big report on what they think the value of a Bitcoin is. So it's interesting. I mean, it's, you know, are you going to walk down to the local McDonald's and spend it? Not yet. But I don't know. Again, it depends upon whether or not people are willing to accept it.
So let's put a point on this. What exactly is a Bitcoin?
I would say it is an electronic medium of exchange. It is an electronic currency. And for whatever value that is exactly what it is. You can take something, it has value, you can turn around and walk up to someone and say if they're willing to accept it, you can give them something in trade, whether it be labor or goods.
And how are they made? Why can't anyone just go out and say, you know what, I'm going to make my own digital currency.
Well, and here's where the mystery begins to come in. And this is where when everybody starts to sit around, because I must admit, when I first looked at this thing, the first thing I went for was old Mt. Gox up there in Iceland, trying to figure out what the heck was going on. And what we have seemed to have on our hands right now is a group of people who are creating unique algorithms that in turn inhabit a given quote-unquote coin. I think they're using the term simply as a way of defining it. And those unique algorithms apparently are limited in terms of the amount that can be produced. And everybody buys one of these algorithms, or multiple ones if you're going to buy these coins. And that seems to be what you've got. Now, I say that with the seams because, you know, again, as much as I've studied it at this point, you get the ever so slight feeling, again, of, well, it's not a central bank, not American Express, it's not PayPal. You know, what is this thing? And again, I will go back to the idea of if you believe in this, therefore it becomes an acceptable means of exchange for you.
And I'll let Carol get in here, but essentially today you just bought yourself a mathematical formula.
Exactly right. And I bought myself a promise that it would work.
And what about the value? Could it, like a stock, just fluctuate up and down?
This is the challenge of any thin marketplace, and that is when you don't have a lot of people in the marketplace. Part of it is how I grew up. I grew up around commodities exchanges and foreign exchange people for about 25 or 30 years. So I'm sort of used to the idea that currencies would fluctuate, prices in gold fluctuate, et cetera. Am I used to having my currency fluctuate? Well, that's something else altogether. And I think in America, that may be a little bit of a harder sell. People like the idea that we haven't had real inflation in this country for over 20 years. And, you know, that permanence of sort of value of, oh, yeah, you may have a dollar and it might be down a couple of percentage points, but you can live with it. You can see it. That doesn't bother people. This kind of thing, I think if you saw those, you know, those fluctuations by 10, 15, 25, 50% might bother people. But again, as you're referencing before, with an Argentina or other nation states, they have come, you know, sadly to live with this. If the market is willing to bear it, then they're willing to put up with it and they're willing to use it.
You're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is Ron Marks. He's senior fellow in the Homeland Security Policy Institute at George Washington University. And we're talking about cryptocurrency, such as Bitcoin. I'm Carol Castiel, along with VOA reporter and producer Doug Bernard. This is a reminder that Press Conference USA is also available online as a podcast. Please visit our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. And as always, we love to hear from you. Please send your feedback to PCUSA@voanews.com. Tell us where you're from and if you listen to PCUSA via the radio or the internet. And here's a shout out to loyal listener Tijani Ibrahim. Well, back to you, Ron Marks. And, you know, I made a rather snide remark earlier about you're buying drugs on the internet, but this is, you know, one of the problems critics are saying about cryptocurrency, that the transactions are anonymous and virtually untraceable, and therefore they have created sort of a niche market for illegal transactions such as illicit drugs. Talk about this problem.
Well, it's certainly there, and you're quite right. I mean, because you do have a certain amount of anonymity, I don't dismiss the idea that it's easier, perhaps, to track the monies. On the other hand, I will tell you my experience with Colombia and some of these other areas, maybe not so much. So does it move more quickly because it's electronic? Yes, it sure does. It's interesting to watch both Treasury and the Fed Reserve at this point being very cautious on this issue. They've written a couple of things on this thing now, but they're looking very carefully at just that issue as to whether or not this thing will become a dominant part of the drug trade, or for that matter, replace Hawala to some extent in terms of passing terrorist funding back and forth.
Hawala, of course, being the...
Essentially, it's a way of owing people. People owe money to other people in other places. And in essence, rather than having a money order saying, you know, I owe something to Doug, Doug will pay you, I'll pay Doug eventually. And that's how you do it. So it's a way of not tracing, again, through the usual electronic means, SWIFT and other things that back international currencies. You know, again, on this one, there's enough evidence from the other side. I would look at it and say, yes, I hear you on this one. Will it move more quickly? Yes. Do things move through numbered accounts right now that are valued in dollars and euros and other things that are used for illicit purposes? The answer is yes.
The way I understand how Bitcoin works, it isn't exactly like a bank account. A bank account, you have, let's say, $1,000 in that bank account. And that $1,000 is there. You can go to your bank and you can access it at any time and use it for what you want. As I understand it, Bitcoins don't really exist like that in a particular place. So if I were a federal regulator or involved with national security, I would have several concerns. One of them is the degree to which, because this is all anonymous, you might start seeing other sectors of the economy kind of moving off the national currency.
Right.
And moving into a place and into a region that governments, it's very difficult for them to control or even manage.
This is a difficult question in part because it goes to the heart of, and I'll go back to it, it goes to the heart of cyber. It goes to the heart of cyberspace.
Mm-hmm.
You have created another dimension here now. Land, sea, air, space, cyber. But cyber touches all of this. And there are no borders. There are no boundaries here. That's why the currency, you're quite right, is very slippery to that extent. You're not dealing with people who have, you know, a concern about, I'm going to have to shift X amount of currency from Switzerland to, you know, France or whatever. So you have a system now that really is the first currency of that space, with all of the inherent problems of that space. If I'm a nation state, and I think it was Japan recently that started to clamp down on this thing, if I'm a nation state, I think I would be uncomfortable with the idea. You're essentially attempting to undercut my currency. When you look at Fed Reserve and Treasury so far, you can tell they're a little cautious because they're not sure about the size of the market. They're wondering whether or not it's a version of PayPal rather than looking at it in terms of a separate currency. But if you listen to the chatter of those people who are directly involved with it, they want it to be a separate currency, and they wish to have it as a separate unit of exchange, moving beyond country borders and moving beyond the dollar. And again, that, you know, very much along the line of sort of the crypto anarchist, because I can't think of a better $10 term for it. But in fact, these are people who are, you know, not violent anarchists, but they're people who don't believe in government. They don't believe in large organizations.
Mm-hmm.
They reject them. And as a consequence, they like the freedom of the internet and of cyberspace. And this just suits their purposes to no end. It very much appeals to them.
That's a fascinating philosophy that underpins the use of Bitcoin. Would you say that those who engage in using the currency pretty much adhere to this philosophy?
Well, now I'm feeling guilty about having bought that Bitcoin. I think you now have a group of people in their 20s who are used to the idea of dealing with the internet the same way you and I would deal with a telephone or a radio or a television set. They're used to instantaneously exchanging information across borders. And you've seen how they've used it in terms of the Arab Spring or in terms of revolutionary movements within or counter-government movements within China or within Iran. So this kind of thing sort of appeals to them. I mean, that philosophy of freedom, I hate to point it out because I know it sounds like a slightly silly example, but it's an interesting form of philosophy. A movie a number of years ago called V for Vendetta, which Natalie Portman starred in, we'll ignore all the movie content for a minute, but the spirit of that movie, the reason you're seeing Guy Fawkes masks around the world is because of that movie. And
right.
The idea was a revolt against a large oppressive government.
Right.
Well, I can understand that, but I think we have to be careful not to confuse, you know, people who were behind the so-called Arab Spring or uprisings, whether in Venezuela and Ukraine, with this sort of demographic that abhors all types of authority, maybe bordering, like you said, on anarchism.
You're talking about very separate things. You're talking about people dealing with oppressive regimes and trying to change them versus people who in many cases are living in fairly free countries who are really rejecting. What I meant for the example was the freedom, the volume, and the velocity of information that people are willing to deal with and accept now that we just simply weren't used to even 4, 5, 6 years ago. It's come up so quickly. That's the other thing, too. It's so fast that this happened.
Ron Marks, it strikes me that one of the few advantages of age is a slight level of distrust. So, no, I actually, some years ago, bought a Bitcoin. It was really more as an experiment to write about as we were trying to cover these kinds of things. There are problems with Bitcoins. Even though the mathematics look impermeable, people can and do lose their money, sometimes spectacularly. What are some of the problems that you see with Bitcoin?
I will go down.
And the other digital currencies,
sure.
I should say.
I think any digital currency, anyone who tells you that anything is 100% secure is a fool. I spent a lifetime, or at least a fair portion of my lifetime, trying to ferret out information from people who were trying to hide information. And if you don't think so, Snowden's got a whole bunch of charts to show you. So anybody who says those algorithms are impenetrable is just wrong, which you're looking for, like in all counterfeiting or all dealings, that you're looking for the 99% solution as much as you can punch it out. I think what you're seeing right now, though, is you're seeing a trend toward people sort of, I think there is some skepticism there. I think the Mt. Gox thing, where things came apart very quickly.
Please just go.
Sure,
this step was, back this a was, minute. Yeah,
yeah
talk
this
about
was
that.
Nominally a Bitcoin mining operation that stored some of these Bitcoins. Some of them were lost. It's not clear exactly. Some were found recently, I assume in the Mt. Gox couch, wherever that may be. So there's a lot of, you know, you've got a lot of people involved with this thing who are maybe experts in one field, but not necessarily in handling monetary situations. You get the feeling, that fine sense of amateurism here.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I'll go back to the fact that on numerous times in history, we've had this. Anybody like I did who grew up out west, I mean, you saw these different mining towns where companies would issue currency, and you'd sort of exchange it to the company store. Did it have any value? Well, it did there. Could somebody counterfeit it? Yep, sure could. Is this a safe, stable market where I would put my money market funds? The answer is, I don't think so, not in this lifetime. Well, maybe not. It depends upon what the next generation of this is. And I don't think we quite know that yet. I think what you're seeing right now are people kicking this around a little bit. It's a few years old. They're not quite sure how it's going to work. But, you know, again, if people start to buy into it in terms of exchange, and it's not too corrupted, which mm-hmm. can happen, or alternatively, and this is a problem still within the marketplace, it is still viewed in terms of speculation versus the purchase.
What I'm hearing here is this is an experiment.
Exactly right. I would really say to you that we really don't recognize yet what either all the problems or potentials are on this thing. We're just seeing the first couple of years of this right now. But I would say there's something, at least to me, that appears that it will be in some form or state of this for a while to come, based on the fact that you do have a broad cyberspace. This fits the cyberspace to some extent in terms of not just the ethos, but the ability to move quickly throughout that space. Whether or not 100 years from now someone's going to be talking about the Bitcoin they bought in 2010 and what the value of that is, I'm not sure. But I think we're just starting off now. And I think if I were a nation state right now, I would think very carefully what this means. And again, I'm taking from what I see from the Fed comments, as well as the U.S. Treasury Department comments, that people are being relatively cautious about this because they don't quite know what it all means, whether there can be a benefit to the dollar, whether or not people will maneuver it to hurt people. Another thing as well, as we move into ages where people can move currencies quickly, you know, this has been done before. We're dealing with forms of cyber warfare, cyber conflict right now, where this, for instance, if this were a major currency or a major form of exchange, you could have some problems.
And in terms of the people who are using it, it crosses boundaries. But would you say the majority are here in the United States?
You know, I can't give a good number on that again because it is all over the place. But my sense certainly is, you know, because it started essentially, it seems to have started in California. That poor guy who was identified as being the person who was has been chased all over the place. Bless him if he is or isn't. But it started here. My impression, however, in Europe as well as in East Asia, that there is a major interest in this. You know, in terms of overall demographics, I'm skipping around the answer. I really don't know, but it appears to me to be fairly widespread, certainly in developed countries.
Right. Now, in terms of developing countries where they have less developed or less sophisticated financial institutions in some places, perhaps a less stable currency, could it have a potential positive future?
I was thinking about that. You know, it occurs to me that a couple of things are going on here. As Bill Gates has pointed out, and The Economist have pointed out, that the number of people who live in poverty is reducing very quickly. We may be at a point now where there are truly only maybe 300 to 500 million people in a world population of 7.5 that are living at true, what we used to think of as true hand-to-mouth existence poverty level. There have been attempts then to try to scale up quickly in terms of some technologies. The one I can think of the most, in fact, is in Africa. Mo Ibrahim has made a lot of money in Africa by essentially skipping over telephone service and just going right to the cell phones. Mm-hmm. If you're dealing with currencies that are unreliable and you don't know how to value things, you tend to go for things that hold some value. I just came back from the United Arab Emirates. I spent some time in Abu Dhabi at the National Defense College out there talking about cyber. You know, you go through the souk there and it's filled with gold. Filled with gold bracelets and necklaces. Those aren't just for the decorations of the local women. They're for the decorations of those people who come there to work. By the way, about 9 out of 10 of the population there are expats.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happening is they're sending that gold or wearing that gold back home because they don't trust the currency at home. This is a way of bringing back the money home and being able to exchange. I don't know whether Bitcoin starts to do that or not. It's tempting. But I don't know any examples really off the top of my head of where it's happened.
You know, it's such an interesting analogy there because it calls to, at least to my mind, this idea, to what degree is Bitcoin and these other digital currencies, there's a good 15 of them, to what degree are they ornamentation, something that hobbyists might be playing with, and what degree are they actual holding real value? You use the example of somebody wearing lots of gold. That's not just ornamentation. That's real value that has some permanence and some meaning.
No,
what's your suspicion?
My suspicion is that if you're in a place where the currency is unstable, you know, where you're talking about, you know, things that are valued, when you see inflation going out of control, you go for things that are stable. Or you have a government that's repressive and won't let you take money out of the country or bring money into the country.
Zimbabwe comes to mind.
Zimbabwe is the first thing that came to mind. You find ways of getting around that. I come from a long line of people who've had bad professions, one of which was a grandfather who was involved with bootlegging back in the old days in the 20s. So I am used to the stories of people moving booze across borders, getting money, you know, quietly slipping that cash into other places. So ignoring my family's criminal background, I would say to you that, you know, if people want to do that, and if they want to have something that's stable or relatively stable versus the currency they're living with, or they want to get value out of that country, it may not be a bad mechanism to do it. Now, is the country going to be able to monitor that? That I don't know. But I would suspect as you get into some places that may not have the capabilities of a Federal Reserve or a European Central Bank, that might be a little easier.
Well, we'll certainly be following the development of cryptocurrency, Bitcoin in particular, in the many weeks and months ahead. Ron Marks is Senior Fellow in the Homeland Security Policy Institute at George Washington University. Ron, thanks again for coming in, talking about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. We greatly appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guest. Our engineer was Dave Magnus. And joining me on the program was VOA reporter and producer Doug Bernard. And I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. From Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, the Voice of America has brought you Press Conference USA. You can email your questions or comments about this edition of Press Conference USA to pcusa@voanews.com. And to keep up with all the latest news, tune to the Voice of America on radio, television, or the World Wide Web. Join us again next week when another newsmaker speaks with journalists about the critical issues facing the United States and the world. We'll see you next week for another edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.